Welcome to the first episode in 2022 of the GSI Briefing Podcast. I'm your host, Regina Agia, president of the Garden State Initiative. Today, I am excited to have Mayor Andre Saya from Patterson speaking with me first about his efforts to reduce gun violence in his city. Then we'll listen to highlights of Mayor Saya's dialogue with former Los Angeles and New York Police Commissioner Bill Bratton on policing and criminal justice issues. Mayor Saya leads the third largest city in New Jersey with a population of over 150,000 residents and is our state's most ethnically diverse city. Previously, he served on the Patterson City Council from 2008 to 2018, and prior to that, served on the Patterson Board of Education. Mayor Saya graduated with the highest honors from Seton Hall University with a bachelor's degree in history, and he also earned a master's degree in public policy and administration from Columbia University. Patterson is the only home Andre Saya has ever known. He was born and raised in the city, where he's now raising his own three children, two daughters and a son, with his wife, Farhana. Now let's get to our conversation with Patterson, New Jersey's mayor, Andre Saya. Well, greetings, Mayor Saya. It's really an honor to have you on the GSI Briefing Podcast to help kick off 2022.
Thank you for having me, Regina. I'm happy to be here.
Well, I'm really looking forward to our conversation. But to get us started, Mayor, you lead our state's third largest city. And if memory serves, have an incredible diversity of backgrounds and challenging economic conditions there. Perhaps you could start with drawing a picture for our listeners of the city that you lead.
Thank you. Yes, I am the proud mayor of the historic city of Patterson, which is New Jersey's most diverse city. And we can make an argument, might be the most diverse city in the United States. We also are New Jersey's newest first-class city, or city of the first class, because we exceeded that threshold of 150,000 people. In the last census, we saw close to a 10% increase. So we went from 146,922 people to now 159,722 people.
Congratulations.
Thank you. We emphasize the importance of the census. And in spite of the pandemic, we still were able to not only achieve our goal, but we exceeded our goal as well by almost 10%. So that's where we are. We are founded by Alexander Hamilton, popularized by a Broadway musical, and it was at the Great Falls, which we're proud of. It's a symbol of our city. It's a symbol of our strength. And the Great Falls, we have an ambitious economic vision. We're going to be building a visitor center named for our founder, and hopefully that'll have a ripple effect with economic development, which is really happening in the city of Patterson. We're actually restoring a historic stadium, one of only two ballparks in the country that hosted Negro League games, Hinchcliffe Stadium. Then we have about 500 units of affordable housing that will be finished hopefully by the end of the year. If not, it'll be early next year as well. We just were able to lure a major produce distributor from Passaic to Patterson, $7 million investment, and it'll create over 100 employment opportunities, hopefully for Pattersonians. We have launched the Financial Empowerment Center to help residents who are struggling, and it's the only financial empowerment center in the state to help those residents improve their credit score, reduce their debt, and hopefully become first-time home buyers in the city. We also have the Guaranteed Income Initiative, where 110 randomly selected residents receive $400 a month for the year. And like I stated before, we have our work cut out for us. And we're also proud of the fact that we have the highest vaccination rate amongst cities in the state of New Jersey. So Patterson is on the move, and Patterson is persevering in spite of this once in a century crisis. However, a challenge we face, like many cities across the country, gun violence.
You and I got to know each other over the last year or so when we were working on the reform to our state's bail laws, and specifically, as you just mentioned, for those charged with criminal use of firearms. And of course, what you found was that while New Jersey's Criminal Justice Reform Act, which went in on the books in 2017, it's really been successful, but it could be tightened up in one particular area.
Yeah.
So maybe you could explain a little bit more to our listeners why this issue is so important, not just for your city, but for most of our other cities as well.
Sadly, Regina, this morning I attended the funeral of an 18-year-old with a very promising future. He actually was just accepted into Montclair State University. He's receiving a scholarship. His name's Robert Quadra. And 2 weeks ago, he got caught in the crossfire. Seven people shooting at each other. And he is an innocent victim and leaves behind a grieving mother. Seven people decided to have a shootout on a Wednesday night a few weeks ago. He tried to run for cover, and unfortunately, he was struck in the head. And now he's not with us anymore. And apparently, and these individuals have been brought to justice, at least three of them, and one of them responsible for the shooting. They were supposedly involved, because we had the weapon, in other shootings as well. Now, they were never arrested, but if they were arrested under the current law, because they've never been arrested before, odds are they'd be back on the street. And so they could become shooters again or become shooting victims. Unfortunately, that's what happens. It's like it's a vicious cycle. And so we appreciate the Garden State Initiative taking a leadership role, partnering with my office, with urban mayors, with the sheriff's union, with the PBA, with the state Senate, leaders in the state assembly as well. And we plan to reform bail reform, that it has worked, right? There's merit to it. But sometimes legislation needs to be tightened up, like you said, and this specific component that deals with gun possession needs to finally be fixed. If you are arrested with an illegal weapon, there's no reason why you should be released immediately. You need to be detained.
And, you know, as you're describing, the reform is going to provide judges more discretion and prosecutors more tools to consider all the information of a case to identify those who may be, as you mentioned, a danger to your community and at times a danger to themselves. But I know you're also concerned about preserving adequate safeguards to ensure there's fairness and equity in how each individual is treated. And it was, as I understand it, your main goal, that is balancing the safety of the community with the transparent and fair treatment of those charged with these crimes. So in addition, what other broad positives do you see once this legislation is hopefully passed by the legislature and signed by the governor?
Public safety is paramount. I think you can ask any urban mayor anywhere and he or she will say the same thing. So for those who are arrested for low-level offenses, bail reform is to help those individuals that can't afford bail. And in the past, they've been incarcerated for, it seems like, in perpetuity. However, for those that are violent criminals, we have to keep our residents out of harm's way so that I'm not going to funerals for innocent victims like Robert Quadra. And I have a mother who is inconsolable at this moment. She's disconsolate. So we're here to protect the people that we serve.
Yes, I'm sure that your community is anxious and very supportive of, you know, all the work you're doing on this. And in fact, we saw a lot of that at the event that, you know, we had held together back in October in Patterson.
And thank you. I believe that was a very informative event. I received a lot of positive feedback about Bill Bratton being there. I'm glad that you brought him to Patterson. Thank you. And it made me read his book, too.
Well, he's been following and supporting us, and he continues to encourage, the progress. And also joining us that day were Mayor Green from East Orange, as well as Mayor Guscora from Trenton, and your public safety directors and officers. And, you know, they're all, you know, trying to face these issues and trying to create safe and prosperous cities for all of your residents in all these cities and the businesses. And at the event, Mayor, you know, you echoed comments from Commissioner Bratton that you just mentioned, and you spoke eloquently at that event on the impact of community policing in Patterson. Maybe you could speak for a few minutes about the relationship between the community and law enforcement in your city now.
Regina, in the wake of the murder of George Floyd, the issue of trust became even more prominent, trust between the public and the police. And we have to work on that. We have to reestablish that, because in order for our residents to cooperate, let's say, for instance, in the murder of someone like Robert Quadra, we need them to be able to trust our police officers. And in order to solve more of these crimes, we need trust, but also trust if we want our police departments to reflect the people that we represent, then we want them to trust us enough to join the police department. Yesterday, I launched an initiative. It's an aggressive campaign to recruit more Patterson residents, encourage them to trust us and join us so that others can trust the police department. So this is a full-scale campaign. We bought banners, billboards. We got a van that's going to go throughout the cities. We're going to be in the high schools recruiting seniors. We're going to be in the colleges recruiting Patterson residents. We are going to have police officers volunteer their time to help these young individuals prepare for the civil service exam. So that's what we're doing with Trust here in the city.
Wow, that's an incredible campaign. And so, thank you. I mean, currently, do you know like how many residents are currently on the police force in Patterson?
Well, they're all supposed to be residents. Actually, well, at the time of the test, right? But yeah. So right now, it's a small fraction. It could be anywhere between 10 to 12%.
So you have great opportunity.
I sure hope so. We want them to live where they work.
Yeah, absolutely.
Regina, there are so many benefits. Like, for example, let's say we knew that Officer Regina Agia lived up the block. We might feel a little bit safer because she lives up the block.
Right. And you see them in the grocery store when they're not working,
there you go.
Right? And at church and the weekends. And so, yeah, you really get to know them as community members, also as members of the law enforcement. So I think it's great. Good. I'd love to be able to help in any way we can, of course, at GSI.
Yeah, sure. Thank you.
So I guess, you know, Mayor, just to wrap up, I just wanted to, of course, give you a chance to say anything else you wanted to about, you know, policing and criminal justice. But you mentioned at the beginning, you have a very ambitious agenda for building economic opportunity and prosperity in your city. And you and I have talked about a lot. You can't successfully do that without having a safe community.
Yeah.
But maybe if you want to spend a few minutes on, what do you think are going to be the most impactful initiatives that you're leading now in terms of the prosperity of Patterson?
Well, you and I are on a mission. We have to make sure that this reform bill, reforming bail reform, is adopted by both houses. You've been lobbying who you know. I've been lobbying who I know. So somewhere within our efforts, we're going to be successful and then get the governor to sign it into law, because public safety is economic development. It precedes economic development. You cannot have investors are not going to come into your city if they feel it's unsafe. And people are not going to be moving into your city if they feel as if it's unsafe. So public safety is paramount. We have to address this issue going forward. And right now, where we stand, we owe it to our residents. President Biden was in New York City yesterday to talk about gun violence. And Mayor Adams, he's been besieged. You've had six officers who have been shot in the last month. And I think the statistic that President Biden cited, 306 people are shot every day in the United States and over 100 are killed.
Wow, I had not heard that.
Yes, but that is why you and I have joined forces and we are doing what we're supposed to do for the residents of New Jersey.
Well, Mayor, I look forward to continuing to work with you. And,
yes,
you know, thank you again for joining us on the GSI Briefing Podcast. You know, as I said, you're our first guest for 2022.
Okay, I'm honored.
And I look forward to having you back again when we get this legislation signed and enacted.
From your mouth to God's ears.
Thank you so much, Mayor. We'll see you soon.
Bye, Regina.
As you just heard in my interview with Mayor Saya, GSI co-sponsored a public safety forum in Patterson, New Jersey, with Commissioner Bill Bratton in the fall of 2021. The conversation that follows focused on building trust between law enforcement and our communities, the role of mental health in policing, and curbing gun violence. It's a really informative dialogue on the challenges faced by mayors and law enforcement professionals across our country.
Well, first, I want to express my appreciation to Regina Agia, the Garden State Initiative, Urban Mayors Association, Ashia Hayes, Sheriff Association, Sheriff Gannon, Sheriff Anthony Curitan. Thank you for putting together this forum. And I'm profoundly grateful to you, Commissioner Bratton, for being in Patterson today. I thoroughly enjoyed your book. It only took me about a year to read it. I highly recommend it.
Yeah, some good pictures too. So it's
that's where I went first.
Take a breather from the reading. We look at the pictures.
So you raise a lot of salient points that are relevant today. We're struggling in this pandemic. Mental health is a serious challenge. Something that I was able to glean from your experience in Los Angeles is that you had smart cars that would accompany the police cars with individuals who are trained in mental health assistance. That's something that I'd like to implement here in the city of Patterson. But also with Stop, Question, and Frisk, you gravitated towards precision policing, something we're doing more in Patterson with the Violent Crime Initiative, where you're really targeting your violent offenders.
And you mentioned Sir Robert Peel. He said that the police are the public, and the public is the police. Nothing could be more true. And that's why we want to invest more in community policing, because I think the operative word in 21st century policing is trust. There has to be trust between the police and the public, because it can't be effective without it. And we have to emphasize the fact that law enforcement is not the enemy. They're an ally, that they're here to help. They're here to protect and serve. And those are some of the points that I was able to glean from what you wrote in your book. And I think it's very helpful for anyone who's interested in policing, because for the very first time, we've implemented body cameras. So police officers in Patterson are wearing them, and it's helping not only with just trust, but accountability, but on both sides with the officer and the individual that the officer is interacting with. So there are no questions as far as transparency is concerned. And I can recall that with CompStat, the late and lamented Jack Maple, your friend, you emphasize that ad nauseum in the book. We went to the Jack Maple room, public safety director, our chief, deputy chiefs. We saw it in action. It was January 9th, 2020. I remember because of my wife's birthday, and she gave me permission to go to NYPD. My brother-in-law's here, Sergeant Gaddafi Balgahom. Thanks for joining us. And we were all ready to go. And then a little over a month later, what happens? COVID-19. Mm-hmm. But prior to that, December 28, 2019, I was visiting James Famiano from the NYPD, and he told me, Mayor, bail reform. Watch out for that. And that's why I'm proud to be with my fellow and favorite mayors, Ted Green and Reed, because there's a specific aspect of bail reform that we really need to revisit. That deals with gun possession, because what's happening, these individuals are not being detained and they're released, and they're either the shooter or the shooting victim. So I'm hoping that if there's a takeaway from our interaction with you, maybe that we take a look at bail reform, we revisit it, we tweak it, we amend it, and make sure that these shooters are not back out on the street.
Mm-hmm. Two thoughts along that line. The Salt Lake District Attorney, God love him, recently announced that despite the effort to try to find additional ways to try and keep people out of jail, bail reform, criminal justice reform, that anybody involved in a gun-related crime, he would prosecute them to the fullest extent of the law, that the law allowed him, without exception. Something that New York and its prosecutors have abrogated their responsibilities to the public, and bending over backwards to protect defendant rights. What goes on in New York courts and district attorney's offices as it relates to gun crime is a disgrace. There's a story in the paper the other day of a young man, I think either 16 or 17, who has been arrested 3 times on gun charges in the last several weeks. But because of part of the criminal justice reform raising the age from 16 to 18, where a young person is treated as an adult, that young man keeps going back to family court, where nothing basically is going to happen to him. He gets released to the custody of whatever family he has. So your point, sir, just that, the idea of constantly seeing what everybody else is doing with all of our intentions to try to have a fairer, more just system. But we have to recognize, unfortunately, there are bad people out there that are looking to hurt other people. And so the obligation, the first obligation, has to be to defend the public and then to try to take care of the rights of the defendants. And I'm glad you spent so much time on the book, obviously, that in terms of what you just recited. But the issue of bail reform, which set in motion a phenomenal catastrophe, I believe, in New York State, you, at least in New Jersey, allow your judges to look at a defendant and make a determination, is this person a threat to public safety separate from the charge for which he is in front of the judge? In New York State, that is the only state that does not allow that in the union. A judge has no power to look at the person's propensity to be a public safety threat, despite all of their efforts at reform. And that's a significant issue. Another one that I'm doing an op-ed on that'll be out in the next couple of days that John Miller just did for the Daily News, for the NYPD. The legislature's not done with their reforms in New York. And in New York State, I'm not sure if you have the same thing here, very frequently a criminal's records are sealed from the media, sealed from the public. the idea of giving him a fresh chance, him or her a fresh chance. These are police records, arrest records of an individual, sometimes 100 arrests. The legislature is trying to pass legislation that the police would not be allowed to look at a sealed record, which is in their possession. A tremendous tool in basically understanding the criminal that they have just arrested. So the idea that everybody arrested is going to basically, it's as if it's the first time ever when they go before the judge that nobody can look at the sealed record. That's the insanity of what's going on. It'd be like going to the doctor and basically the doctor, you sitting there mute in front of the doctor. What ails you? I can't tell you. You're going to have to basically figure it out for yourself. The stupidity of criminal justice reform. And my great frustration, Larry Moan, certainly the great work they did at the Manhattan Institute, and I'm certainly of law enforcement, is that we were getting so much right that in 2018, 365 murders in New York, down from 2,243 and going down, that murders in New York City were down 90%, overall crime down 80%. And so what were they going to reform? Prison population down dramatically, which is one of the goals. And so they were reforming reforms that they didn't even know were in existence. And at the beginning of the book, prologue to the book, I have a quote. Those who don't know their history are doomed to repeat it. And what are we doing in 2021? We're repeating the history of the 70s and the 80s. Yeah. And the second part of that quotation, and I think some of my police colleagues in the room would agree, and this is John Chimney's quote, and those who know police know we don't know our history. And that's one of the issues in policing. We don't teach it. We don't in our police academies teach it, that if you learn it on your own, and I happen to love history and I'm a student of police history, but I would bet most of my contemporaries really, oftentimes might know something about the history of their department, but they don't know the history of policing. And that's why events like this are important for the idea of coming together, sharing ideas, and particularly an event like this where it's mayors who basically ultimately control the destinies of your case cities. You know, police chiefs influence it, but basically the other guys that control it, the other guys that basically go to the voters and are held accountable for it.
Mercer, do you have another question?
Yes, in your book, you underscored the importance of order maintenance. And it's hard to maintain order when you can't maintain a relationship with the people that you protect and serve. And that's why you would emphasize the fact that community policing is where we should really make that investment as opposed to defunding the police.
You need to give them time to interact with the community. If they're busy totally responding and dealing with crises and have no time to really just engage your knock on the door program.
Yeah.
That's what these neighborhood coordinating officer in New York City is all about. It's modeled after the senior lead officer program that I saw when I went to LA. It is volunteer officers who basically are free from calls, who effectively spend their whole time knocking on doors, walking, going into stores, getting to know people, giving them their smartphone numbers, their email, so they can interact with them. That's what drives me crazy about the legislature in New York and the council and the state. They have no understanding of all the things that are going on in the police department to address the issues they're trying to reform. It's so frustrating. I'll tell you. It's you know, I've spent 50 years of my life trying to get this right, and I think we finally were getting it right in LA and New York. And then we have a generation of political leadership that most of them weren't even alive. The average age going into the New York City Council this January, I think, is something like 32 or 34. They went around in 1990 when those 2,243 murders were occurring.
Right.
Yeah.
And if I may dovetail on that,
sure.
You also have underscored cultural competence and cultural immersion. I found that to be effective in the city of Patterson. I saw our councilwoman, Dr. Lisa Mims. We attended an event recently with community policing. It was a skateboarding event in Patterson. And I was so encouraged because it was such a positive event that our city
needed.
Did I break anything?
Did I break anything?
Yeah, actually, I hurt my toe.
You wouldn't get me up on a skateboard. I'm happy to be an observer.
But I feel like that's what you are focused on. Community immersion, cultural competence, knowing the people that you protect and serve. It's really essential to being effective as far as
I'd be willing to bet here in New Jersey, and because you mirror across the river in New York, in terms of the population makeup, that probably some of the more progressive entities in immersion, if you will, assimilation, have been the police. The idea of minorities joining the department, and I look at NYPD as a minority majority police department, 20 some odd percent female. The rest of the population, 15, 18% African American, reflecting the overall population of the city. 1,000 Muslim officers, reflecting that huge population of 1 million Muslims in the city. That the idea of policing, particularly in our larger cities, and I'd be dare say probably in your cities, is increasingly reflective of the populations they're serving. So that there's a greater appreciation of the rank and file officers, and an officer's riding beside a Black, or riding beside a Sikh, or riding beside a Muslim officer as they engage with each other. There's that cultural immersion that occurs just because of that proximity. And that's not widely recognized, just how progressive policing has been in its acceptance of gays, trans, that
it's been a big change.
Probably more so than society as a whole.
You did a great job at the beginning describing the policy work we're working on in terms of bail reform. Is there anything you want to add before we close up here?
Yeah, just to reiterate, with bail reform, we're not criticizing the entire law. What we're saying is that there's a component we feel needs to be amended. So just to borrow a phrase from President Clinton in the 90s, relative to welfare reform, where he said, we're not going to end it, we just want to amend it. We want to amend this law.
Well, that's the effort in New York City, that bail reform was necessary, is needed. When somebody dies in prison after sitting there for 2 years because you can't get out on bail in Vikers, you need reform. Mm-hmm. But thoughtful, collaborative reform, or in this case, your legislature needs to be talking to you, the mayors, to get your input from on this issue. I wish they had done that in New York. So now we want them to reform the reforms, and they're reluctant to admit their mistakes.
Yeah. So if we could just focus on the component that deals with gun possession, not allowing these shooters to get back on the streets to either shoot or get shot. We're going to engage our respective legislative delegations. We've already spoken to Assemblyman Benji Wimberly. We're going to be speaking to the entire leadership team here in the 35th District, and I'm sure Mayor Green, Mayor Missouri will do the same.
Right.
And then we'll come to a consensus, and I'm hoping that we can have some type of action in the lame duck session.
The GSI Briefing is produced by the Garden State Initiative. For more information about GSI, visit us at gardenstateinitiative.org, and be sure to follow us on social media. Don't forget to subscribe to the GSI Briefing on the podcast platform of your choice. And please leave us a good rating. This is Regina Agia, and thank you for listening.